I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, U.S. warships, including an aircraft carrier, are patrolling off the coast of Venezuela. President Trump has ordered covert CIA operations in the South American country, and there's growing fear that the U.S. could end up in a war with Venezuela. What are the drivers behind this hostility? And later on The Source, a week ago, DHS raided a food truck court on San Pedro. Over 150 immigrants were detained, at least two people arrested. Officials say the raid was conducted by the newly established Regional Homeland Security Task Force of South Texas. Dozens of the immigrants are suspected of being connected to the Tren de Agua, a gang based in Venezuela. San Antonio Mayor Gina Ortiz-Jones is asking for more information. She joins us. This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
A donation comes in many forms: a sustaining membership, a one-time gift, even a home, land, or commercial property. Donating property is a great way to give back, and you may even claim a tax deduction. Get the process started today. Call 844-277-HOME or visit tpr.careasy.org/real-estate-donation.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Some major new developments happening as the United States continues to turn the screws on Venezuela. The U.S. has formally designated the Cartel de los Soles, a group that it alleges is tied to the Venezuelan government and military and drug trafficking. They now say it is a foreign terrorist organization. There has been a sizable U.S. military presence forming near the Venezuelan waters, including naval assets that include the aircraft carrier USS Gerald R. Ford. The U.S. has been blowing up boats in those waters, 18 boats so far, about 60 people in Operation Southern Spear. So there are fears that the U.S. could be going into war against Venezuela. What does that look like, and what is the rationale? We're joined by Guillaume Long with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And Guillaume, welcome to The Source.
Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Well, tell me, how big of a deal is it that the United States has designated Cartel de los Soles as a foreign terrorist organization?
Well, it's a big deal in a sense that it shows some kind of resolve, and we can explore that in more detail. But, you know, it is being sort of derided by, I would say, experts across the board, and I think there are very few exceptions, as a very strange move, given that there is broad consensus that the Cartel de los Soles doesn't exist. It's not a thing. It's not a cartel. It's actually a CIA term that goes back to the early 1990s, way before Hugo Chavez even won elections in 1998. He came to power in 99. We're talking about the early 90s, 92, 93, 94, when two Venezuelan officers were suspected to be in cahoots with cartels. And so because they were wearing these sun symbols on their uniforms, the CIA sort of called this scandal. It was a scandal more than anything else, in which the CIA was actually implicated. Cartel de los Soles, and it's suddenly been revived out of nowhere by the Trump administration. But all the sort of security experts and people who really focus on cartels and criminal organizations in the Western Hemisphere really have not been using that label because it's not a thing. It doesn't really exist. And we can go into more detail exactly as to what Venezuela's role is in the overall drug trade. But again, there's broad consensus that it's pretty minimal. There's some transiting of drugs for sure. Venezuela is a neighbor of Colombia, which is still the largest producer of cocaine in the world. But it's probably, I mean, numbers vary, but nobody puts cocaine transiting through Venezuela above 8%, you know, en route to the U.S. And most figures talk of 5%, whereas, you know, other countries on the Pacific coast, particularly around 70% of cocaine en route to the U.S. Transits through them. So, yeah, I think it's Cartel de los Soles is certainly I would say, a spin on things, to put it mildly, and a communications trick rather than a real serious, rigorous appellation that comes from experts or from academia.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. If you got a question or a comment about the United States posture towards Venezuela, do you think we are going to go to war or topple the government there? What do you think is happening? What is the end game here? So, Guillaume, the thing about drugs, that's been the rationale that we've heard from the Trump administration. That's why we are getting so tough on Venezuela, that they are killing Americans with drugs. We're blowing up these boats that are in these waters because they are ferrying drugs, I guess, to the United States. So let's talk about those boats. About 60 people have died so far. They just blow them up out of the water. They're not even sure if they have drugs on board. There are other ways of conducting an operation like that without killing people indiscriminately. What should we be thinking?
Yes, I think for sure it's the whole thing doesn't appear to be about drugs. You're right to say that these, I think what we can call extrajudicial killings in the Caribbean, have not been accompanied by any form of proof provided by the U.S. government that there were, in fact, drugs on board these boats. I think it was closer now to 21 boats that have been blown up in the Caribbean, so probably about 83 victims. And in fact, there are only two people who survived these attacks, one Colombian and one Ecuadorian citizen, who were returned to their countries. And those countries have not pressed charges against those people. And they're the attorney generals, you know, or the prosecutors or whatever their names are in these in Ecuador and Colombia, fiscales, we call them in Spanish, are not are claiming that they can't press charges because the U.S. is not providing evidence that they were trafficking drugs, right? So that's actually something which has gone unnoticed in the media. But the only two survivors out of these, and then 83 victims, there are two additional survivors, have not been prosecuted by their countries, despite the fact that Ecuador has expressed it was very keen to prosecute, particularly, and Ecuador is very allied to the U.S. in this, and President Noboa in Ecuador is very sort of pro-Trump. Colombia is a different political situation, but it's certainly the case in Ecuador that they really wanted to play ball. But they haven't been able to do so because the U.S. refuses to provide evidence. So just like the U.S. has refused to provide evidence that these boats were in fact carrying drugs to these countries and to their judiciaries, the U.S. has, generally speaking, not provided any evidence to the world and to the media.
Right, but let me say this: as far as these boats, they seem pretty rickety. They don't seem like they're really capable of even getting to the United States.
Well, that's right. I mean, we don't really know what the U.S. is claiming because, again, it hasn't really made any claims aside from the satellite images that sort of been circulated around the media. There's no real accompanying subtext to give an explanation. Are these boats, you know, on a much more complex transiting route going from one island to another? Then the drugs are going to be transferred elsewhere and something else is going to happen. And, you know, is this part of a longer process and story, or are these? Is the U.S. claiming that these boats are going directly to the United States?
Well, we're not getting those answers, but we also have a history of using, you know, approaching these boats and boarding them and finding out for sure before we start executing people.
So there, yeah, exactly. So there are different issues here. One of them is, of course, an international law issue, which has to do with the fact that you don't execute people. The people are allowed to due process, including if they are indeed criminals. They should be taken to court. So a lot of human rights organizations have condemned the U.S. for what they consider are extrajudicial killings. And then there's a whole maritime law issue as well, because on the high seas and there are all sorts of international law issues there. But then there's another, I would say, even more common sense law enforcement issue, is if you're going after the cartels, then presumably these boats are not carrying the big cartel barons, drug barons, or, you know, the heads of the mafias, right? They're just poor people carrying drugs, probably fishermen, if they are in fact carrying drugs, which we don't know. Then it's, you know, then presumably the United States would, which is actually what the DA claims that it does, would arrest these people, interrogate them, get intel to go higher up, to penetrate the organization, and to
right, they would work the case. That's not happening. All right, we've got to take a break here. We're going to talk some more about what's happening with Venezuela and the United States. Why are we doing this? That's the big question. 833-877-8255. The Source continues right after this.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be joined by San Antonio Mayor Gina Ortiz Jones. But right now we're talking about the United States and its aggressive posture towards Venezuela and what is happening there. We're speaking with Guillaume Long. He is with the Center for Economic and Policy Research. And we're taking calls, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Sean. Sean, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yes, I hope I'm getting this story right. In the 1980s, I think it was the columnist Michael Kinsey predicted Reagan invading Grenada. I think I'm getting it right. He looked at the economic numbers and his polling. He said Reagan needs to win, and this is going to happen, and he was right. I'm wondering how much of this current conflict is similarly being motivated. And then if that is the case, how effective is that likely, considering that most of Trump's base is, you know, America first, non-interventionist at this point? It seems like it's a very different situation. So if you could comment on both those things, thank you.
All right, Sean, thank you for that. So Guillaume Long, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that's right. There's a completely different agenda which has nothing to do with drugs. It has to do, I think, fundamentally with the reassertion of U.S. power in the Western Hemisphere, reassertion of the Monroe Doctrine. We saw it under the first Trump administration. We're seeing it again under the second Trump administration. There's a broader picture here which has to do with the U.S. rollback from other areas in the world. And I think it's tightening its grip on the Western Hemisphere, or it's trying to tighten its grip on the Western Hemisphere through sort of weaponizing the war on drugs and having security cooperation with a number of countries and trying to sort of militarize its backyard again, sort of nostalgia for gunboat diplomacy of the first three decades of the 20th century. Now, I do think it's fundamentally about regime change in Venezuela. There have been a number of attempts in the last 25 years to coup Chavismo, both under Hugo Chavez and now under Nicolas Maduro, on behalf of the United States, particularly 2019 and 2020, were 2 years where under the first Trump administration, where there were failed coups in Venezuela. And this is key, supported by Marco Rubio, back then senator, very influential senator in the Trump administration on all things Latin American, now, of course, Secretary of State. And we know that this is a real favorite project for Rubio, regime change in Venezuela, which he also sees ties in closely with a regime change in Cuba. He sees both issues very interrelated. And I think it's all about that. It's basically more than about drugs and these little dinghies being bombed in the Caribbean, these small boats being bombed in the Caribbean. It's about intimidating sectors of the Venezuelan armed forces and sort of pushing them to rebel, to defect, to coup Maduro, essentially. I don't think, and the listener was asking a question whether it's likely to be successful, or what prospects there are for regime change, or what kind of outcomes we can expect from this buildup, rather. I don't think it's likely to be successful. The Venezuelan military has been remarkably loyal over the last few years. And of course, every time there is a coup, the security apparatus tightens, right? Because the coup mongers or the would-be traitors are purged or whatever. And so there's less incentive next time round to rebel. And the Venezuelan security apparatus be very tight, actually, over the last few years. And we've also seen Chavismo as a political force, even if it has been weakened over the last few years, is still a real thing. And there's militias. And so I think, airstrikes or military action in Venezuela would potentially actually be disastrous for the United States. This is a country, the listener mentioned Grenada. The last time actually the US did a full-on invasion of a Latin American country, it was the invasion of Panama in 1989-1990, which was successful in military terms, but that was a country with back then 2.5 million inhabitants. Venezuela's 28 million inhabitants, which is actually larger than Iraq was in 2003, right? It's a completely different ballgame. And I think it would be disastrous. A listener also mentioned a MAGA base that's been hostile to this. And I think actually, generally speaking, public opinion in the United States is hostile to regime change in Venezuela. We've just seen some polls which established that 70% of the electorate is hostile to this. So all around, I think both the prospects for a successful regime change are unlikely, and the likelihood of a quagmire, both political and military, is actually quite high. So it's all around a bad idea, I think.
The caller, let's go to Jose. Jose, you're on the air.
Hi, and happy Thanksgiving to all. There are three major reasons why this is happening. Number one, they need the U.S. always has to get rid of a socialist government, especially if they have oil, if they control oil. The second one is they need to get the Russians, the Iranians, and the Chinese out because they want to end those relationships that that Venezuela has established with those countries. They want to cut those ties immediately. And basically, it's a power grab. They want to send a message throughout South America that the United States is calling the shots. And this is after decades of neglecting South America, Central America, and not establishing a good trade policy with these countries. We've simply just ignored them. And now that Trump needs a win, he's going to go out there and he's going to use the heavy hand. It's not going to work, as your guest has suggested.
All right, Jose, thank you for the call. Do you want to react to that, Guillaume?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of this has to do with, again, reasserting U.S. power in the Western Hemisphere. And that for sure has to do with natural resources. Venezuela is the largest, has the largest oil reserves, proven oil reserves on the planet. So I don't think that's a small incentive. But I think more generally, there's a real, let's not forget, between 2000 and 2015, broadly speaking, the first decade and a half of the 21st century, a real, what is often called in English, a pink tide in Latin America, with a real sort of sovereign resurgence of Latin America, a lot of left of center governments, not just in Venezuela, but all across Latin America, in Brazil and Argentina, Ecuador, Bolivia, and elsewhere, pushing back against sort of U.S. intervention in the Western Hemisphere quite successfully for a decade and a half. And when the first Trump administration came to power in 2017, there was a commodities decline in Latin America, and it was a resurgence of the right wing in Latin America, including some kind of far right actors like Jair Bolsonaro and so on and so forth. And I think the first Trump administration really thought, right, this is a good opportunity to rekindle the Monroe Doctrine, to reassert U.S. power in the Western Hemisphere. The Chinese had been making very important inroads, and I think there was a real political will to make sure that the Chinese were out of our hemisphere, in inverted commas, right? Except this is not happening. Most Latin America, most South American countries today have greater trade relations with China than they have with the United States. And you've had a return of the left in a number of countries in Latin America, so it's not the same as during the first Trump administration. You have Lula now in government in Brazil. You have people like Petro in government in Colombia. So I think the Trump administration is trying to go back to this, again, Monroeism, we call it the Monroe Doctrine, of the first Trump administration, but not particularly successfully. And I think it's not just a question of Venezuela or Cuba, some of the actors that are perceived to be more radical in the Western Hemisphere or more anti-US in the Western Hemisphere. If you look at countries like Chile, even Argentina under very pro-Trump Milei, and certainly Brazil under Lula, the elites in those countries, including business elites, are not keen to roll back trade relations or economic relations with China. I think that time has passed. So what you're seeing actually in Western Hemisphere is the US brandishing a big stick, but not offering much carrot, right? It's all about security cooperation. It's all about the military presence and not really that much about economics or trade or investment, which is where the Chinese are making huge inroads. So I think it's a long way round to say this, but I think the U.S. military buildup in the Southern Caribbean off the coast of Venezuela is somehow also the result of that frustration and that impotence, right? It's like, oh, we're back, and look, we have a huge navy. But, you know, on the ground and in terms of economic relations, the Trump administration, neither in its first term or in its second term, has really succeeded in rolling back the tide of Chinese presence in the Western Hemisphere.
I want to lean into this idea about this is about a drug war. This is about saving American lives from drugs coming from Venezuela. And looking at where Venezuela usually ships its cocaine that it generates, it usually goes to Europe, does not produce fentanyl, which is the problem that we have in the United States. I mean, it seems like this should be exposed as a sham excuse, but this is something that the administration really wants to say, we're doing this because of drugs. If anyone looks at how drugs come to the United States, what drugs come to the United States, the answer is not Venezuela. Why isn't more said about that?
Yeah, I agree. In fact, there is literally no fentanyl, zero fentanyl coming out of South America, right? I mean, it's probably the other way around, actually. The little fentanyl that's coming into South America is coming southwards, right? There's not a lot of consumption in South America, but that's certainly not where it's being produced. So it's cocaine, which is obviously a problem, but it comes a distant second after fentanyl. The opioid crisis is the big drugs crisis in the US, and none of that goes via Venezuela. But even in terms of the cocaine, you're right. I mean, actually, a lot of the South American, Colombian produced cocaine, South American produced cocaine is going to Europe. So Europe has a bigger cocaine problem than the US right now. And again, a lot of that cocaine is not going on boats crossing the Caribbean. In fact, if you really look at what the routes are, so we've already established that it's mostly through the Pacific Ocean. So a lot of the cocaine is coming out of Colombia south through its southern border into Ecuador and into Peru. And then it's kind of going to the U.S. or going to Central America en route to the U.S., via the ports on the Pacific coasts of those countries. So Ecuador has a big security problem right now. It's got the highest homicide rate in Latin America, in the Western Hemisphere by far, because there is a real sort of turf war for the control of those ports, because the drugs are leaving from these ports. Now, they're leaving from these ports, but they're actually leaving in massive containers, not in the small boats, fishing boats that we've seen being bombed by these drones in the Caribbean. A lot of the drugs, a significant percentage of these drugs are leaving in quite legit export containers. So banana shipments is the big one, right?
Right. So Ecuador. Administration, it's not about the drugs. You're saying it's about China? Because we're in a cold war with China. Is this a proxy war because of that?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a more macro explanation of, of the U.S. really want to reassert itself in the Western Hemisphere. But in very concrete day-to-day terms, I actually think it's Marco Rubio and his neoconservative colleagues inside the administration who have wanted for a long time regime change in Venezuela, who also associate regime change in Venezuela to potential regime change in Cuba, who are deeply ideological, committed against what they perceive as the fight against communism. I think that's ultimately their biggest motivation.
Do you think Nobel Prize winner Maria Cortina Machado will be able to take over?
No, I don't think I don't think it's going to be that easy. I really think that if there's a militarily imposed regime change in Venezuela, particularly if it's imposed by the United States, we're likely to see a lot of violence, potentially a civil war, probably an insurgency if they actually got to the presidential palace, if they managed to install a different regime in the presidential palace. I don't see it as a likely.
So this has got bad idea written all over it, right?
I think that's correct. Yeah, I think it's a very bad idea. Yeah. And I think it's not a coincidence that the US has never militarily attacked a South American country. There's been in history, a lot of US attacks and even occupations of Central American and Caribbean.
In Mexico, for sure.
From Mexico, it was the Veracruz. It wasn't the whole country, but yeah, it was taking over the oil port of Veracruz. But South America itself, there's never been. There are US military bases and there's US presence, but there's never been an uninvited military presence, if you like. And I think that's a big country, Venezuela. And it's
a populous country. All right, we got to let you go. Guillaume Long, Center for Economic and Policy Research, thank you so much. Appreciate your insights.
Thank you very much.